Hello, I'm Mark Kate. This is Why We Listen. In each episode, I meet with my guests to listen to and discuss music, whatever they choose for whatever reason they like. In this episode, I sit with John Philpott of the band Barren Heaven in their tour van just before they performed at Public Works in San Francisco. We listen to The Model by Snakefinger, Phrase 1 by Serge Blenner, and The End by Sybil Bayer. We're now listening to Radio Innocence by Richard Youngs. Just a little aside, I love Richard Youngs. I came really late to this party, and I can't believe how much good music he's made. I totally recommend him. So first off, I must apologize for the delay since the last episode. It's been a long time. Life has really gotten in the way of Why We Listen. I've had some performances, I've recorded an album that'll come out on the label Sleep Genius in 2014. I'll talk about that more when it gets closer. I've made some videos. Anyway, I'm really happy to be back and really excited to jump back into Why We Listen. And I want to talk firstly about something that's really been on my mind since the last episode. Well, I mean, it's always been on my mind. This idea of taste and criteria for taste, you know, like what constitutes a person's taste and what constitutes my taste. And this has really been on my mind lately because since the last episode of Why We Listen, Kanye West put out another record, which has no effect on my life whatsoever. But I realized I really liked it. And worse than that, I paid for it. Like I this person who I really sort of felt like does not deserve anything to push his career forward any more than it already is. I paid for his newest record, and it's great. It's really good. It's really well constructed. It sounds good. It's provocative. The lyrics are kind of a big old mess, but they're really kind of thoughtful and interesting. I mean, I don't have a radio, and I don't watch cable or anything, so I don't know if I'd ever really knowingly heard his music in the past, but I read a lot of news and a lot of music journalism. And so over the years, even just reading headlines, I pretty much felt that Kanye West represented like everything that keeps me away from listening to corporate R&B and hip hop. But someone was recently playing a song off of 808s and Heartbreak, and I was like, this is amazing, what is it? And they told me, and so I was like, oh, actually, maybe I need to spend some time with Kanye West, because this is good music. And so I heard the new record, and it's kind of brilliant. I find sometimes it's a little easier to enjoy someone's work if you know that, well, they were awful people, but now they're dead. I know it's really awful to say, but like a really obvious example maybe is like Nietzsche, you know, like probably an awful human being in you know, real life, but like he's dead, so whatever. As opposed to, you know, if Nietzsche were like walking around, one might go like, I don't know if I really want to give this guy my money and buy his books. He just sounds like a dick, and like I don't want to be handing him money. I wonder how much other people think about that. I mean, I think about this kind of thing all the time, but I wonder about how much people generally think about that, like how much they politicize their desires or rationalize their tastes, or are they just apathetic about the whole thing? Like, I wonder about like urban metalheads wearing Burzum t-shirts, you know, like do they think about that they're sort of like flying a white supremacy flag? Or like hipsters who are wearing Ted Nugent pins on their denim jacket. Like, you know, irony can't dissociate you from how awful that is. I talk about Ted Nugent a lot on this podcast, don't I? Anyway, but if I look at my own tastes, I'm hard pressed to like uphold my objections to someone like Kanye West and then turn around and like defend listening to like Led Zeppelin. If you can follow this, you know, Kanye West, it's nonsense. You know, he's talking about brands of cars and brands of champagne, like it's meaningful and it's just incredibly shallow. But then you listen to Led Zeppelin and he's singing about Lord of the Rings. Like that's just nonsense. I obviously like in some context have a high tolerance for bad lyrics or silly lyrics. So where are my criteria situated? When is a certain kind of lyric acceptable in one circumstance and not another, or what constitutes my taste when listening to Led Zeppelin, where I'm immediately like, well, I can, you know, I just so readily overlook incredibly cornball lyrics. But then when I encountered Kanye West, my first reaction is like, well, that's just crap, and I don't listen to lyrics that are that shallow. It's like, well, obviously I listen to shallow lyrics, but what constitutes my taste? What are the structures that I just sort of implicitly and unthinkingly have in place that construct my taste? This really brings me back to one of my favorite books that really gets into this subject, called Let's Talk About Love by Carl Wilson. The book is part of the 33 and a Third series of books that I totally recommend. It is a series that has one author, usually a music critic of some sort, write about one album. So, for example, former Why We Listen guest Gita Dayal wrote a book about Brian Eno's Another Green World, or there's a really great one about Led Zeppelin's fourth record by Eric Davis. It's a really great series. Anyway, Let's Talk About Love is the only one in the series that has a subtitle, and it's called Let's Talk About Love, : A Journey to the End of Taste. And it's about the album Let's Talk About Love by Celine Dion, who, as we all know, is not really worthy of music criticism. And that's really what the book is about, is Carl Wilson was thinking about the way in which Celine Dion, one of the most popular, biggest-selling, loved and revered artists in the world, is just so readily dismissed by anybody who thinks seriously about music. And he's making generalizations here, and I'm making generalizations here, but, you know, what music critic really takes Celine Dion seriously? And like she's so beneath criticism that even just non-critics, like anybody who's serious about music, like, we don't even talk about her. We don't even like dismiss her like we talk about like Lady Gaga or Kesha. Like, she's just so beneath it all. It's so obvious that there's nothing there that we don't even bother with her. But Carl Wilson decided, well, let's get to the bottom of this. Like, what makes us music critics, us serious people who think about music seriously, what actually holds us above like the population of the world who loves her? Like, we're greatly outnumbered. How do we justify that disparity? Why is our taste above their taste? It's a great book. I don't want to give away the ending. I recommend you read it. Anyways, I think the only way I can really connect this to the interview with John is that I think he has like great taste in music, and I hope I can say that, make a really problematic statement like thinking someone has good taste in music after just having deconstructed that idea a little. I hope I can say that with seriousness and lack of seriousness and be taken seriously. It's especially signified by the fact that he used to intern at this amazing label called Table of the Elements. So here we are sitting in the tour van, constantly like rolling up the windows and rolling them down because it's like hot in the van and we need air, but we need to close a window so we can talk quietly. And we're sitting in front of the club, and I prefer to do these interviews with people in their homes where they normally listen to music. And here's like this touring band, and it's sort of like their second home. I would assume they would characterize it, you know, where they sit and really intake music. And I think that was sort of perfect. So I'd imagine you do a lot of driving around in vans, yeah?
Yeah, we do.
How do you decide who gets to listen to what in the van? How does tour music get decided?
Usually we go with co-pilot. Whoever's co-pilot will help the pilot choose. But I guess often, if you're driving, you have the power, and you can overrule whatever the co-pilot.
So there's a system.
There is actually.
That's a system, brilliant.
Yeah, and mostly. Yeah, I would say we all like kind of have similar tastes, and we're all into the same stuff. Occasionally, you know, we hire folks and stuff too, so occasionally we get a new random person that has some strange musical tastes. And
is that good or is that tense sometimes? Where so, you're like, you know, I can't take any more Hank Williams.
Well, it's not. Yeah, I mean, I would love Hank Williams. Yeah, sometimes it's just like, yeah, just there's been a few moments where it's like, whoa, all right, we're just going to have to take this. Take control back.
like what was the most uncomfortable music you had to endure on an 8-hour drive? Because of the system.
Oh man, we had to listen to a lot of what was it? Oh, and you know, he's a good buddy of ours actually, but I'm gonna make fun of him anyway because he made us listen to all this like Def Jux kind of like hip hop.
Yep.
For like a long time. And he was like trying to make us understand how it was good. And
he's trying to sell you on it.
Like, God, man, you know, we don't like these tracks, man. There's better hip hop, but you know, that he loves that stuff. So
yeah.
But that was like one of the moments. That was one of the hard ones. I think other than that, though, it's, you know, we all keep it pretty much in the same. Ballpark, we all feel the same way.
That's good. So all right, what are you gonna play me?
So yeah, we're gonna play. First, we're gonna play some Snake Finger. And I don't know why Rent's in San Francisco, and somehow I feel like this just has this Snake Finger for some reason reminds me of San Francisco.
Well, see, from here, I mean, in the residence.
Well, the Residents.
I've lived here forever.
But. Right, so that's maybe why it is, because I think he played with the Residents, or. No?
I don't know. Maybe? I've never seen them live or anything.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's just. There's something. I think maybe I was just discovered them at the same time or something, you know, like. There was that Residents record, Eskimo.
Yep.
And I think that I heard that, and then I heard Snake Finger at the same time, and I was kind of like, this is. The weirdest music on earth. And you know, Snakefinger, he's from the UK. He's from the UK.
Oh, okay.
And so for some reason, this, you know, this, the sound of his music, I guess it must be the Residents that just makes me think of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And like, there's that other band, Arkansas Man, that's a San Francisco band.
I don't know them.
Yeah, they're kind of like in the same vein, I think, as, but a little bit more like, you can move to it or something like that. I don't know. This song, you could dance to it in a strange way if you wanted to. But yeah, this we're gonna listen to The Model.
A model and she's looking good. I'd like to think I'm misunderstood. She's playing hard to get, she smiles from time to time. It only takes the cameras to change her mind. And you can hear them say,
she's looking good for beauty, we will pay. Bye.
she gives the best she can. I even saw her on the cover of a magazine. Now she's a big success, I wanna see her again.
Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Gotta clear it all up. And now I understand. He did play with the Residents.
Okay, that makes sense.
And that was actually a cover of Kraftwerk's song, The Model.
Yeah. Have you heard Big Black's version of that?
Mm-mm.
They put out a 7-inch of The Model. It's pretty... You should check that out, too. It's good. It's good.
I bet that's really good.
It's ridiculous.
Okay. That's great. But yeah, he played violin, apparently, with the Residents. And he lived here. He moved here in 1971.
There you go. 71?
Yeah.
Oh. Jesus.
I know, right? Think about the freaks in San Fran back in that day.
Totally.
Probably pretty awesome.
I feel like that song was almost like a commentary on Kraftwerk or something like that. Like, because the rhythm section's such a, like... consumer electronics drum machine, mm-hmm. as opposed to Kraftwerk's, you know, homemade or, you know, their own machines. And then he's playing guitars that sound pretty synthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, they do sound synthetic. He's like coursing those things out. There's probably like at least 4 tracks of guitar on that. Yeah. He's just it's really crazy how he can play, like, the guitar to make it sound like a synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to figure out how to make that happen for about as long as I've like been messing with keyboards, and
yeah.
I can't quite ever, no matter what pedal I get, I can't ever get that, like, there's like this middle ground that I've been searching for, and I just can't find it. Maybe one
day. With a guitar, making a guitar sound more like a synthesizer?
Yeah. And I don't want to do it with the, you know, MIDI. You can get a MIDI guitar.
Yeah.
And kind of blend it, you know? But I just have that in my mind that there is some way, probably through a vocoder. But mm-hmm. it's just like, I don't know, I haven't found a vocoder that can track really well. I really like
it. The Mutron.
Yeah.
Gets enough sort of...
Qtron, Mutron,
we've ringing.
Got the, what else, we got this one pedal by Eventide, Pitch Factor,
mm-hmm.
that was sort
I
of like,
that thing.
I've found that sending drums through it sound really neat,
mm.
and, but the guitar, I don't know, it's not, it just, it's like, it's almost there, but it's not exactly what I'm looking for.
All right.
One day, someone will make that pedal.
You're gonna be in, like, Alabama, you're gonna go like, oh, guitar shop, and you're just gonna find some box that some guy made.
I hope so. Yeah, that'd be great. So yeah, this is next track is by Serge Blenner. It's A1, Phrase 1. good track.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, that dude, he made a bunch of, it seems like, you know, made a bunch of electronic music, and it kind of makes me wonder, like, whenever I find out about guys like him, you know, he's born in 51 and made a bunch of electronic music, and like, just how many other random guys there are out there doing that stuff. Like, was the, this year I found out about J.D. Emmanuel. He's great as well. Like, kind of just very meditative sort of synthesizer music.
Yeah.
I'm just a sucker for that kind of.
Totally. This is exactly the type of thing that I try to seek out, and I'm so delighted that there's always more out there.
Yeah.
Like when the Harold Grosskopf came out on Revenge.
Yeah.
I was like, so amazed that there was something like that still out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's really, yeah. I think the first thing that I mean, it, you know, it calls to like kind of like the Steve Reich and Philip Glass and that kind of stuff. But then like sort of the first record that I found that was kind of in that vein was a record by Richard Pinhas, the
Helden
guy. He did this record called Chronolice, I think is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just short, kind of short, a bunch of short tracks that are all that. And it's cool. So good and mellow. And
you know what's weird though? That track you just played really sounds a lot like, do you know the song Arpeggiator by Jean-Michel Jarre?
Mm-mm.
I think it's just on his like Live in China, and I'm embarrassed to say that I know the details of his career, but
you shouldn't be, man. He's the guy. He played.
It's really similar. It's really like even the timbre of the synths and the way they're the rhythm of the arpeggiators. Cool. It's really similar. I'll send you a link.
Okay. He played at the Pyramids or something.
Jean-Michel Jarre.
Or no, is that a different guy? Maybe I'm thinking.
Maybe. He's done a lot of crazy. I mean, he's got a. Doesn't he have a star named after him? Like, he's kind of like. He's on a grand scale.
Right on. Astro.
I saw a concert he did, like, live at Houston. Did you ever see that?
I didn't, yeah.
Where they had, like, it was downtown, outdoors, and they had, like, all these projections on all the skyscrapers in downtown Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, like, blocking light beams to play his synthesizers, and they're, like, projecting, like, the space shuttle and Saturn. It was just, like, the most overblown hokey, and he's in, like, a flight suit.
Amazing.
Like, with wind blowing his, like, his locks.
I love it.
It was so corny and awesome.
Yeah. You know? Synthesizers. They make you do the weirdest thing. All right, let's parlay out of synthesizers and listen to some natural stuff.
It's the end, friend of mine. It's the end, friend of mine. Time is over. Oh, we could simply say I love you. Now you open the door. Leave me crying, trying to embrace you again. Trying to face this damn situation. Man, I can't. It's the end, friend of mine. It's the end, sweet friend of mine. Dear friend, I cannot tell the reasons why we started well. Good time. Give me some wine when you open the door. You seem hurt. Do try to speak a word to me. What on earth could really go wrong with you and me? Yet it's the end, friend of mine. It's the end, sweet friend of mine. Time seems to be over. could simply say I love you. Now you open the door. I feel cold. Why can't I hold you in my arms? Told you that life is short, but love is old. It's the end, friend of mine. It's the end, sweet friend.
It's a nice song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like, you know, I just love this. I love this track. It's The End by Cybill Bare. And, I don't know, man. This woman's record, the Color Green is so good, and her voice is so good, and I don't know. It just embodies everything I like about soft folk music, you know? I feel like I spend a lot of time listening to, like, synthesizer, kind of heavier, even rock and, like, you know, just a lot of dance music and stuff like that, and then when this is like the antidote to this kind of music, and it's great. Yeah, she's so pretty. When you look on her record cover, look at her. She's like some sort of angel woman in a field singing these amazing songs. There's just like the little guitar. It's like, how does some reverb on her voice. There's like pretty much her and then Linda Perhax, mm-hmm. Two of them.
Parallelograms?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like deep. Both these records are pretty deep obsessions.
Oh, yeah.
To the best of my knowledge, I think that she's kind of her own. She was like a mom. And she put that record out. I think maybe her kids put it out. Thank you, Wikipedia, telling me everything I need to know. It's weird, you know, like when you do something like this, and I realize how quickly, like, I don't know specifics about people, but I deeply enjoy their music, you know?
Yep.
I guess that's the important thing. So she's German.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, and the record was... It was compiled from recordings that she did in the 70s, this record, Color Green. But yeah, such a beautiful voice. So good.
It's also interesting going from listening to something so technologically specific, and, you know, so much music we listen to, there's so much emphasis on the studio craft that it's amazing to listen to music that it doesn't matter what microphone was in the room at the time, and not like none of that sort of matters. It's like,
yeah.
It's just a voice and a guitar is plenty.
Yep. Quality of the song is paramount, you know. I mean, in a way though, the way that it sounds, you know, it's just old, just recording on some home recording thing, and mm-hmm. you know, if you were to do that today, you just have to, I don't know, somehow just remove yourself from everything that's going on, because it's just so easy to gather all, you know, get a laptop and a recording device. You could just hole up in a cabin somewhere with a reel-to-reel and a microphone and try and write a really good song. Yeah. And you might be successful. Whereas you probably could get a computer and a microphone and... I feel like the odds are better that you're going to make a better song, you know, be less talented and make a better song.
Yeah.
Oddly.
Well, there's something to songwriting that's that simple, and listening to her, where sometimes you feel like she just makes it seem easy for her, you know,
yeah.
Like that just seems so effortless, not emotionally effortless, but like that, I don't know, that it was easier for her to get there or something.
She's singing from the heart, you know. It's definitely, yeah, you can hear it. Her lyrics are really good. That's the hardest part about music to me. It's just writing good lyrics. Because you don't want to be embarrassed by those for some reason. I feel like being embarrassed by a bad, like a distasteful song is, as long as the lyrics are good, it can go on forever in my mind, you know?
Yeah. But yeah. Do you get embarrassed by your own lyrics ever? I'm not going to ask specifics.
No, thankfully no, because, that may be one of the reasons we don't have as many records as we probably should have by, from when the band started to now.
Yeah.
Because it takes a little while to kind of figure out the words. And then, the troubling thing about it is we end up burying the song, the words behind effects and all this stuff.
Well, especially on the last album, yeah.
Yeah. I guess I could have said anything, but but it's sort of, when we play the songs, I can sing with confidence, and right. I think if I was singing some stuff that I didn't really believe in, then it would be, it wouldn't come off the same way.
Right. Do you, when you're writing the music in its entirety and talking about the simplicity of songwriting, do you think about it in terms of like songs that are, that could be traditionally,
played
traditionally and stand up, or is it like, no, that doesn't matter. It's actually just about what you're making and the sounds you're using and all that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do
you think about that?
I do. Oh, it goes back and forth, and I don't, we don't put any like kind of barriers up, as far as whether or not we're going to be able to play something with an acoustic guitar or not.
Yeah.
But it is always nice when you're able to do that. There's something about, I think just the songs have a better backbone when you're able to kind of pick it out.
Yeah.
On a guitar or piano or something like that. But there, I feel like there's, equal importance on the sounds. They're equally important. What sounds are coming out, and you could almost, and this goes back to just kind of listening to a lot of drone music and Table of the Elements type kind of music, that you can just play one note. As long as the sound is interesting, then the song is good.
Yeah.
You
should check out Barren Heaven. The work is available online at barrenheaven.com. And I welcome your comments. Please share them at whywelisten.org. I love to hear from you. And if we've introduced you to music that you want to hear more of, please buy it in the highest quality possible, as directly from the artist as possible, even if it's Kanye West. And if you're an iTunes or a Stitcher subscriber, which I recommend, makes it easier, please take a moment to rate or review Why We Listen. I'm Mark Cate. This is Why We Listen. Thanks for listening.